Insperity presents the Small Business Advocate Show with Jim Blasingame. This is a copyrighted production of Small Business Network, Inc. All rights reserved.
We're back. It's 12 after. I'm Jim Blasingame, the Small Business Advocate, 800-531-3815, toll-free. Coast to coast, and my website is www.jbsba.com. Joan Pride is with us. She's our guest this hour. She's senior editor with the Kiplinger Editors, and just can't do without her every week. Joan, welcome back.
Thanks, Jim. Good morning.
Good morning. It's good to have you back.
Yeah, but I don't get to see you this week.
I know it. Congratulations.
Yeah.
Yep, we had a good time last week. It was fun, and whenever I go to Washington, folks, Joan and I and our respective spouses go to a little restaurant where we can get some lamb, a little rice, some Kwabili Palau is the dish that I like to get. It's an Afghan restaurant.
I remember.
And I introduced you guys to Afghan, didn't I?
That's right, you did.
Yeah, and now you can't get enough of it, right?
We love it.
You like it. You love saying that I'm right about something, don't you?
Yeah, it makes my day, Jim.
I bet it does. Yeah. Joan, the job market picking up is not too far off, a revived job market, as Kiplinger says, is not too far off. What's up with that?
Well, don't you think it's about time?
I think it is. So what's happening?
Well, basically, by late this fall, we're going to see firms ramping up production, and then they're going to need more people. And so we're not saying that employment is going to really surge then, but it probably by next spring it will.
Yeah, and one of the things you guys point out is that the inventory levels have gotten just about as low as they can get, and productivity has, according to Kiplinger, we've kind of wrung as much as we can out of the inventory levels that were built up. We've wrung as much as we can out of the productivity levels with technology and everything, and at some point in time, we've got to hire some folks back.
Well, you know, in terms of the hiring front, we're almost victims of our own success because productivity has been so high and has improved so much that it sort of has negated some of the need for new workers.
Capitalism is a paradoxical being, isn't it?
Boy, sure
it
is.
It really is. I mean, I've been thinking about that lately, Joan, and you know, you just pointed one out there that our own success in terms of innovation and seeking efficiencies has really created this, job problem we've got, this employment problem, or I should say unemployment problem we've got. But it creates other problems for capitalism. I mean, it creates enemies. Did you know that?
Enemies?
Well, yeah. In other words, when a marketplace, when an economy, when a society is doing really well, it has a little extra money for people to not work and to basically, to be on the other side and to have opinions like some of the naysayers about capitalism. You know, there are a lot of people out there right now who think capitalism is not good. But the truth is those people who are saying it are the people who are living off the largesse of capitalism.
Well, that's true. That's kind of ironic.
It is. Anyway, I've been thinking about that a little bit. Not too many people do. I'm afraid I have that kind of mind. But you say, Kiplinger says that by the spring, we're going to be posting net gains in employment of 100G a year. I mean a month.
Which is a big turnaround. We have a nifty little graph on our front page that I wish your listeners could see. But
it's really nifty, folks.
It sort of tells the whole story. It's a bar graph, and every bar is pointing down from 2001 on. And the first bar that's pointing up is our estimate of, I guess, a quarter to come in 2004.
First quarter 2004, exactly. Yeah. And you're right. It's very dramatic, and even though it's 100,000 a month, that's going to take a while to eat up the what do we got? A couple of 3 million people out of work right now.
I think so.
Who want to work?
Right.
So it's going to take a while to recover that. In fact, you guys point out that later on down on page one there, Joan, you point out that you call the jobless rate stubborn. That even with all this, by a year from now, the unemployment rate still only going to be just barely below 6.
It's kind of amazing when you think about employment was in the, I guess, the below 5 and just slightly above 4 for so long.
Yeah. And you know, Joan, the thing that when I see these kind of numbers, when I understand that, you know, all the different things that are happening to employment in America, we've got a major paradigm shift in America. We talked about it a little before. Not only is the economy bad, that's caused layoffs. Not only is globalization happening, which is sending jobs overseas, it's a natural thing. It's been going on since the marketplace started 5-10,000 years ago.
Right.
But when I see all this, what I see, I don't see unemployment. I see entrepreneurs waiting to happen.
Oh, sure.
And see, that's the kind of thing that can happen in America, more
that's
so
true.
Than any other country on the
that's
planet.
Right. That's right.
Even in Europe, I talk to my European friends, and they tell me that it's not as generally accepted. It's not as intuitive for them to start a business from scratch like it is in America.
Well, I also think in Western Europe there's more of a sense of entitlement because there are so many more government benefits.
Right. There's no question about it. And more's the pity,
right,
Joan, as they're,
sure,
as they're finding out right now, isn't it? Aren't they?
Well, in a big way. They can't sustain that social safety net forever.
Mm-hmm. But you know, Joan, I was reading recently, apparently Chirac and Schroeder, the PMs of France and Germany, are working together to generate new opportunity through the government. They still don't get it, Joan.
Through the government?
Yeah, in other words, the government's going to spend more money to create jobs. They don't get it.
Well, all they have to do is encourage entrepreneurialism. They don't have to create the jobs themselves.
Right. That's right. And get some of the regulations, some of the burdening regulations and that safety net you talked about. It's just prohibitive for a small business to have to deal with.
Well, exactly, especially if small businesses are, you know, have to comply with the same rules as large businesses.
Absolutely.
You know,
and
in
Joan,
this country, you have a lot of major rules that do not apply to very small businesses.
And exactly. And one of the things, and a little bit later on, we're going to talk about this, and we're going to talk about a new presidential candidate. I'll have some things to say about his attitude about the economy. But before we leave page one, Joan, some of the industries that you guys point out this week that are going to actually continue to lay off are the steel industry, the auto industry, the apparel industry. Boy, those guys have been gutted over the last 10 years. The furniture and the mortgage-related financial services folks. And so those people are not going to be contributing to jobs. They're going to be cutting jobs.
That's right.
We got more to come with our good friend Joan Pride after these messages. It's 20 after. Stay with us. We'll be right back. Here's ZZ Top to take us out. Back is 23 after. I'm Jim Blassingame, the Small Business Advocate. We're visiting with Joan Pride, senior editor with the Kiplinger Editors. Joan, the White House is reading the Kiplinger letter and saying from their mouth to God's ears, talking about the 100,000 new jobs a month next year. According to the White House, is really hoping that you're right.
Now, why would they be hoping that? Let me think. What is next year? What's happening next year? Something.
Well, you know, the economy. I think that the stars are aligning pretty well for the Bush White House, because as you know, the economy really is on a good track right now. Employment will probably not be as big an issue a year from now, and with any luck, and I really mean this for the planet, not just for the administration. But with any luck, we will be doing good in Iraq, and Iraq will be closer towards self-determination.
Yeah.
That's really that. You know, Joan, we gotta figure out a way. Democrats and Republicans have got to figure out a way, and French and Germans and Russians have got to figure out a way not to make that a political football.
Yeah,
that's
hard because you're right. It's not just Democrats and Republicans; it's the whole world. The other countries that, you know, are, I guess, need to step up, and probably most of them aren't going to.
In the past 12 months and in the next 12 months, we'll find out who the world leaders are on our soil in America, as well as other countries, because, Joan, in my opinion, I don't think it's too. I don't think it's hyperbolic to say that Iraq, settling Iraq and getting them some self-determination and letting that become a free market economy in their own view of what a democracy ought to look like, not our view, but their view,
right,
to me, is a pivotal issue in the, for the 21st century.
Well, it becomes a wonderful example and role model for other countries in the region.
All around them.
Sure.
Think about that. There isn't...
Iran.
Maybe Turkey is the closest Islamic country that comes to being a democratic society.
Yeah, they've slipped back a bit, though, I think.
Probably, but still, I didn't say they were there. I just said they were the
right.
closest.
Right.
And then maybe after that a little, maybe Pakistan a little bit, but really not.
Maybe.
It's hard to say, but we got to do something about that over there. And so anyway, Mr. Bush is, I'm sure, is hoping that you guys are right about the 100,000 a month new jobs, and we'll see. The some other areas, though, Joan, is the regulation area that you guys pointed out, and the regulations will get the once over, you say.
Right. The idea is for the government to look at how regulations affect manufacturers.
Mm-hmm.
And there's been a lot of efforts by the SBA to make sure that the government checks to see how regulations specifically affect small businesses.
That's right. Yeah, the Office of Advocacy, Tom Sullivan's shop over there, he actually it reports to the president. He's in the Office of Advocacy, but he works for the president.
Right.
President Bush, and this is new for this administration, Joan, to give this, not the advocacy office, but the new teeth that he has, that he's talked about on the show, to make sure that before a law is passed, before a regulation is promulgated, it has to be vetted by him, and he has to basically make sure that it's not too onerous on small business in particular.
That's right. That's very important.
It is, and especially when you understand, Joan, and I'm going to say this, as long as this inequity exists, small business owners pay $7,000 a year on average per employee just to cover the regulatory environment, and that's more than double what big businesses pay for the same thing.
Yeah, it's completely out of proportion.
It really is, and that's just with what's already on the books, Joan. That's the reason why Mr. Sullivan is working so hard to keep that from getting worse. And actually, Joan, 2 years ago, that number was $6,000. It's gone up $1,000 in the last 2 years.
That's tremendous.
And see, that's the same thing as a tax, Joan. You know that, don't you?
Oh, sure.
It's just like a tax.
Right.
Let's move over to page two and talk about Mr. Clark. Tell us about,
okay.
Actually, I should say General Clark, right?
Well, that's the joke, that people like his first name. It's General. and the fact that the idea being that General Clark is now a declared candidate for the Democratic nomination for president, which kind of, I guess, throws the whole field into disarray. But also, I heard about a poll this week that sounded very odd. It said that he was even with President Bush. I can't believe that's going to last.
Well, I've seen it. It's the Newsweek poll, Joan. And Joan, we covered this earlier in the week with Stephen Moore, the president of the Club for Growth. And I asked him this question. I'll ask you this question. If General Clark, who has no political background, we don't know how he thinks, what he thinks about anything, really, except
right.
maybe his thoughts on the current Iraqi situation, which he basically went on ad nauseum on CNN for several months. But other than that, we don't know anything. We really don't know very much about him at all in terms of what kind of a leader he would be. And yet, within hours of announcing his candidacy, he is even with President Bush. So here's my question. Does that say more about polling, or does that say more about the American people? Which does it say the most about?
Well, if you believe the polls, it says a lot about President Bush. I mean, how could people be preferring someone they don't know over Bush? That's very interesting to me.
Well, yeah, but I'll tell you, Joan, the thing is I think that's a poll that's not going to stand up. And I'm not trying to defend Mr. Bush. I just think it's ridiculous. I mean, if it were anybody, if it were, you know, I don't care. Somebody just shows up on the scene, we take a poll, and they're already, you know, at that level. I wasn't thinking about it so much as I guess President Bush as I was the other candidates, the other Democratic candidates. Stand by. Quick break, 29 after. We'll be right back with Joan Pryde. Stay with us.
He inspires small business.
We can teach these barbarians a lesson in Western methods and efficiency that will put them to shame.
He tells it like it is.
I realize how difficult it's going to be in this godforsaken place where you can't find what you need, but there's the challenge.
He's Jim Blassingay, the small business advocate.
With all due respect, sir, I believe this is going to be our finest hour.
We're back. It's 34 after. Thank you very much for hanging around with me today. Joan Pride is our guest, senior editor with the Kiplinger Editors. And, folks, their website is kiplinger.com, K-I-P-L-I-N-G-E-R.com. And, Joan, again, congratulations on the 80th anniversary of Kiplinger.
Boy, it's been a big celebration.
It's been
80 years.
When did you guys have your big soiree last night?
Just had our big soiree last night.
Was it fun?
It was fun. You know, I'm not doing too well this morning.
Yeah, I was going to say, you sound a little bit hungover, maybe.
I guess I partied too much.
You didn't get some bad ice last night, did you?
That's what must be what it was.
You got some bad ice.
You know.
That happens sometimes. But anyway, congratulations. That's a big deal, folks. Still a small business. Still a family-owned small business in a really tough industry, the news publishing and financial publishing industry. So congratulations on that. Joan, let's. I want to come back to this Clark candidacy, General Wesley Clark candidacy, for a couple of reasons. Number one, I want to go back to the Newsweek poll. The reason I think that poll, which, by the way, folks, as I remember, the poll came out pretty darn close. It was like 47-48 Clark to Bush. I forgot. It was really pretty much down the middle.
Yeah, because that's within the margin of error.
Exactly, and so. But the reason I think that says more about the Democrats than it does about the Republicans is because they've got the 9 or 10 folks out there who've been running now for all these months, who've been doing debates and traveling around the country, spending a lot of money, and they can't get any traction. Here comes this new guy who just is basically, for the last several years, has been nothing more than a talking head on CNN, and he drops in and announces. And all of a sudden, he sucks all this oxygen out of the Democratic side. When you understand that President Bush was elected with, you know, basically a 50-50 vote last time, then this thing tells me more. That tells me more about the Democrats than it does the Republicans.
Well, let me ask you this. First of all, I don't know. Was the poll just on Democrats, or was it on all types of voters?
I think it was. I think. I'm not sure, but I think it was just basically a cross section. But I didn't see any kind of an independent Democrat or Republican.
I guess
breakdown.
What I don't understand is why didn't Bush trounce Clark in this poll then?
Well, I think it tells the Republicans that, hey guys, as of right now, we're back to the 2000 election.
Right. Exactly.
50-50. The America.
I mean,
split
he's the incumbent with the advantage of the incumbent.
Yeah.
He should have been way out ahead of Clark. So I think you're right. I think if Karl Rove is smart, he will take this as a wake-up call.
Yeah, I think so too. But what does it say to the what is the Karl Roves in the other Democrat camps? What are they saying about
well,
this?
Well, I think they should think that people are hungry for an alternative to President Bush.
Right.
But they don't see a good one. If there was a good one, they'd be flocking to the person.
And do you think that Clark could become the equivalent, the sort of poor man's Hillary? You see what I mean?
The rumor going around is that he's a stalking horse for Hillary.
Uh-huh.
Have you heard that rumor?
Tell us about what that means.
What that means is that he's floating a candidacy, but he's not really serious about it, that she's actually going to, you know, pop out from behind the curtain.
He's her straw man. He's her
straw
man.
Right, and that she would become the candidate, and he would be her vice presidential candidate.
Well, see, I see him being her vice presidential candidate. I don't see that happening in 2004.
I agree, and she has vehemently denied it. Not that I'm, you know, believe her denials.
She is not going to run, barring some kind of a meltdown, as we said. That looks like he actually could be beaten. I think the stars are going to be aligning for him next year for the Mr. Bush, but she's not going to run in 2004. And where I think he's a straw man for her is he could be the equivalent of her as a spoiler for the other Democrats. Somebody to come in and sort of lift the Democrats' image up a little bit, and to set the table, so to speak, for her to run in 2008.
Right, because if you have one of the others of this group running fairly strongly against Bush now, even if they lose, they would sort of be the odds-on, I guess, leader in the polls come 2008.
Mm-hmm.
And I would think they would have sort of the best shot at the nomination in 2008.
How about this? Not instead of a Clinton-Clark ticket, how about a Clark-Clinton ticket, Joan? Clark for president, Clinton for vice president.
Which Clinton for vice president?
The senator.
Okay. I guess the president, the former president, could not even run for vice president.
No. I'm talking about Senator Clinton as vice president.
No, I know. But you know, Bill's just dying to get back there. He could find a way.
Yeah, you said it first, Joan. You heard it right here, folks, from Joan Pride. 20 Tail, we got more to come. We're going to change subjects right after these messages. Stay with us. 20 Tail.
When lights close a tired eye, I'll soon be with you, my love.
We're back at 17 till. I'm Jim Blasingame, the Small Business Advocate. Thank you very much for hanging around with me today. And let me remind you, coming up in the hours, 2 hours straight ahead, Bill Hubbard's going to join us. We'll talk about human resources issues. Gail Goodman with Roving Software is a company I want you to know about because they're helping people get their message out online, their email marketing message, in a way that's avoiding some of the problems that we've got right now. And so looking forward to that. Rick Mara will join us, and then Steve Von Yoder, and I'll tell you more about them a little bit later on. Back to Joan Pride, senior editor with the Kiplinger Letters. Joan, the California election is going on.
Yes.
The Ninth Circuit decided they overruled the 3 judges and the 11 judges, I guess, in the Ninth Circuit unanimously said the election would go on. And so I'm glad to know that. I'm glad we're going to get that insanity straightened out over there.
Paper said this removes the last legal hurdle, so I guess there's not going to be an appeal to the Supreme Court.
The ACLU announced that they would not take it to the Supreme Court, which it was a huge... Didn't you hear that sigh of relief from the Supreme Court the other day?
That's what that noise was.
Yeah.
Oh, mm-hmm. Yeah.
Joan, let's move over and talk about... let's move on down and talk about health care. At the bottom of page 2, more self-insured firms will join forces to lower Rx drug costs. What's up with that?
Well, as you know, rising drug costs is sort of the bane of small business in the whole health insurance area. It's terrible. But the idea is, of course, economies of scale. And there'll be, and as a self-insured firm, you're not paying premiums to an insurance firm. You're taking the load on yourself.
Mm-hmm.
So that's an even bigger burden. So if they can sort of pool their resources, then that will make it easier to get rebates and discounts.
It'll be interesting to see how Senator Ted Kennedy, the archenemy of small business, comes down on this, because he doesn't like it when markets get efficient. He wants the government to be in charge of health care. See, he's against the association of health care health plans, you know, where chambers of commerce and different small businesses can band together and buy health care as a group. He doesn't like that idea.
Oh, right, right.
Yeah, because that might be successful, see, Joan. And he doesn't want that. He wants the government to be in charge of
health care.
That's exactly right. Well, I'll tell you what, he's a 20th century dinosaur that's waiting to, I'm anxious for his retirement. Let's move over and talk about Mr. Bush. He's going to do something, Joan, that he's never done before, has he?
Issue a veto.
A veto. You know, his father had a Democratic Congress. He was the king of veto, wasn't he?
My dad used to call him the veto bandito.
That's
like
good.
That?
But
that
Mr.
Good?
Bush has never wielded that pen, has he?
Never. Well, he's never needed to.
He
Why
likes his
he?
Congress, doesn't he?
Well, of course he does. It's, you know, the Republicans control both houses.
Yeah.
So well, it's news if he does veto something.
So, which is what we have right now. So what's going on?
Right. Well, we list several bills here, and maybe I'm missing something here. I thought the first bill that he might veto would be the legislation that's moving through Congress to block those new telecommunications limits, you know, the limits on, the end to limits on buying TV stations and radio stations in different markets.
Mm-hmm.
I think the Bush administration underestimated the public outcry against lifting those limits, which the FCC did, and legislation has been moving through to put those limits back on.
To reverse the FCC's ruling.
Exactly, and he has talked about vetoing that legislation, so that would be huge.
It would be. That would be pretty controversial, but the other thing is the overtime bill, isn't it? Isn't that one of them?
We have overtime and also lifting travel curbs to Cuba.
Travel? Oh. So he's going to vote. He's going to vote to. He's going to veto lifting the travel curbs.
That's interesting, right? That would be interesting because I think there may be a segment in Florida that would want those travel curbs lifted so that they could see relatives back in Cuba.
You know, Joan, let me ask you this question. Fidel Castro is not going to live forever.
Oh, I think he is.
No, he's not going to live forever. He's going to die and probably
around
soon.
For about 50 years.
Probably soon. He's 150 at least.
Yeah.
Okay. Can you see Cuba being the 51st state in our lifetime? What about that?
Yeah, I just can't believe that there's much power. I feel there has to be some kind of power vacuum there once he's gone.
Well,
that we could just jump right in.
I'm not saying it's going to happen in 5 or 10 years, but I can see within our lifetime, you know, meaning if you and I lived to a normal age, I can see Cuba becoming the 51st state.
That's interesting.
I don't know how we'll put him on the flag, but we'll try. But I think that'll be interesting.
Yeah.
Okay, let's move on down and talk about some business costs, Joan. Shipping is going to go up because the economy's picking up because they can.
Right, and capacity is pretty tight. So to get your cargo on a ship or a truck is going to be more expensive.
Yep, that's the bad news. And folks, so you need to try to lock in. According to Kiplinger, it sounds to me like you need to try to lock in some. If you can get a low rate now, right now, you might want to try to lock it in. What do you think, Joan?
That's right. That's a good point.
Yeah, and work on those volume discounts as much as you can.
That's right.
That's another thing that looks like there may be an opportunity there. But also on the good news side, Joan, they're going to be cheaper airfares. I noticed that Delta this week lowered many of their airfares, and other airlines had to follow suit.
Right, and I think the major carriers are being pressured by these upstarts such as JetBlue. And others that are really pushing prices down.
Right. Yeah, and it's very interesting, Joan. One of the things that's really helping the airlines, I think, hold rates down and make the connections better is they're coming in with these regional jets. You know, they're employing more regional jets now, these 50-passenger and 39-passenger regional jets.
And I think those go point to point. They get away from this whole hub situation.
That's exactly right. And they're crossing the state. I've flown them many times to Washington, but I flew one from Atlanta to San Antonio once.
Wow.
That was that's a long flight on those little commuter jets. Stand by, quick break. We'll be right back with Joan Pride, senior editor with the Kiplinger Editors. It's 10:10. We're back at 7:00. Jim Blasingame, the Small Business Advocate, Joan Pride is with us, and she's with Kiplinger Editors. And they got a website I want to mention again, Kiplinger.com, KIPLINGER.com. And don't forget, folks, to check out their publications. They've got a weekly letter that's been out now, the 80th year. This week, I think, Joan, is the actual 80th anniversary of the Kiplinger letter. And again, congratulations. And they also, that comes out weekly, and then they have the three biweekly letters, the agriculture, the tax letter, and the California letter, and then they got a magazine.
That's right. It's Kiplinger's Personal Finance Magazine.
And it's available not only by subscription, but also on newsstands and bookstores. And Joan, give us the phone number, please.
Right. Our toll-free number is 800-544-0155.
Check those guys out, folks, and check the Kiplinger website out. Even if you're not quite ready to subscribe, go there and check it out, and you'll find some interesting stuff there that they got for free. But then I think you'll find out that you'd like to know more about their publication. And they make it easy on you. They'll give you a 30-day free trial. So check that out. Joan, let's move over to page 4 and talk about Homeland Security. Congress is going to leave anti-terrorism law as it is. What does that mean?
Well, the president had wanted to see the law expanded, and then some of the opponents of the law had wanted cut back. But I guess it's all going to end up being a wash, and it'll just sort of stay as is.
What did Mr. Bush want to expand? I know the other folks wanted to get habeas corpus a little bit more in evidence, but
right. Well, he wanted to go the opposite way and get more authority in terms of federal investigators being able to probe some of the problems out there.
Mm-hmm. You know, Joan, you and I talked about this 2 years ago. right about now, 2 years ago, we were talking about the tension that was going to, the dance that was going to be conducted between making sure that we were safe and not trading on our liberties.
And I think it seemed to me that we might tread just a little bit on liberties in the name of safety.
Well, and I mean, who wouldn't at this moment, Joan?
Exactly.
You know?
Sure.
It's understandable. Let's move on down. And China is, things are picking. I don't mean China. Japan is picking up a little bit. They're actually getting, things are getting a little bit better over there. Their PM was, their prime minister was just reelected. He's kicking butts over there and taking names, and I'm proud of what he's doing over there. Maybe they'll, maybe if that economy, Joan, could just pick up a little bit. Look what that would do to the world economy.
Boy, and it's been so long since they've been a player at all.
Almost a decade and a half.
That's right. It's incredible.
It's unbelievable. They've been in the tank over there. China is still rocking and rolling. Japan could really be. I still say they're in the muzzle. You know, going to be in for a muzzle blast from China, Joan, over the next few years.
A muzzle blast?
Yeah. In other words, I say that that China, as you know, is an economic tsunami that's washing over the country and over the world,
yeah.
And Japan's right there in the muzzle.
Well, yeah, I guess. In other words, in terms of Chinese products flooding Japan,
or just neutralizing any advantage Japan might have. Because they're neutralizing everybody almost.
Well, that's
in terms,
yeah,
of manufacturing.
Us.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. No question about it.
I guess I just see Japan's economy as so isolated and insulated. We've had so much trouble cracking them that I'd be curious to see what success China has.
Well, I'm not so much thinking about their internal consumption as I am their exporting ability.
Oh, I see.
That's what
By
the time they kind of get cranked up again.
Right.
But
it's a whole different world.
Exactly. According to Kiplinger, the NAFTA partners, Canada and Mexico, their economies will strengthen. And boy,
that would be nice.
Mexico really needs to be. I'm really worried about Mexico long term, Joan.
Well, there's a lot of trouble with their institutions and their infrastructure, so I think you should be concerned.
Well, they got some major problems. They had a gift handed to them at the expense of America when NAFTA passed 10 years ago,
right.
And they have not been able to capitalize on it. And basically, they've lost whatever they were given.
Gee.
From what I can tell in some of the reports I read, they have not been able to capitalize on the good fortune that NAFTA gave them.
Yeah, but I think Canada is a different story.
It is. But they've got a little bit of a Europeanitis, though, don't they? They've got some social issues up there themselves.
Well, that's true. They have a lot more government support than we do. And remember, they have a lot of influence from Britain and France, so that would make sense.
No question about it. Joan, thanks for being here. Good job today.
Thank you, Jim.
We'll see you next week.
That sounds great. I'll be back.
And happy anniversary to you.
Thank you very much.
Got to go for this hour. Before I do, I want to thank my heroes, small business owners, and each and every member of our military standing opposed. Folks, let's never forget them. We still got a lot of people in harm's way. Let's keep supporting them. Let's keep praying for them and keeping them in our thoughts. This is Jim Blasingame, the Small Business Advocate, and this program is for you.
Insperity presents the Small Business Advocate Show with Jim Blasingame. This is a copyrighted production of Small Business Network, Inc., intended for the private use of our audience. Except as otherwise provided by copyright law, all other copying, redistribution, or publication without prior written consent is prohibited. All rights reserved.